we're making better decisions. And the fruit quality should even be better on this next go around.
In the present, I need to evolve. I need to change lots of things.
Okay, I think a few times they asked me, Giovanni, do you have fun in what you're doing?
Well, you reinvent yourself, right? I think that's really where that begins and ends.
I think 18's legendary. It's going to go down in history.
I haven't made the same wine twice, have no intention of duplicating anything.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 356. This week we feature Simply Italian Chicago 2019, featuring Sean Dorr, Laura Donadoni, and Egle Capilupi Armani. A few weeks ago, we were back in Chicago for the Simply Italian Great Wines Seminar. We tasted many of the well-known Italian wines you've heard of, as well as those that are lesser known. In between seminars, we spoke with three presenters to get their ideas about the wines of Italy. Sean Dorr, sommelier and ambassador for Vino Nobile di Montepulciano; Laura Donadoni, journalist, sommelier, and ambassador for Italian wines; and Egle Capilupi Armani of Albino Armani Wines. You can also hear Laura Donadoni on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the term sommelier.
So I'm in Chicago, and this is another Italian wine tasting, and it's been a really interesting morning so far. It's amazing what you can learn. I'm here with Sean Dorr, and Sean is the brand ambassador for Vino Nobile di Montepulciano.
For the U.S., yes. And Vino Nobile, of course, is, the noble wines of Tuscany.
Yes, they are. They're wonderful wines and happen to be one of my favorites, so I'm probably a little biased here. Tell us a little bit more about the specifics of the wine itself so people in America can understand. What does all that mean?
Sure. So we historically use a clone called Fognolo Gentile. However, that's Sangiovese by another name. The Italians have many different names for Sangiovese, and our particular clone is Sangiovese. It's a little smaller berry, but we are predominantly Sangiovese. You're allowed in our appellation to use other grape varietals, many, many other indigenous Italian grape varietals, as well as international varietals. But up to a minimum of 70% Sangiovese. What we find is most producers use 85 to 90% Sangiovese and then season with other varietals.
I like how you use that word season. It really is a little bit of that. It's not a recipe, it's a sort of a pinch of-ish.
It's absolutely, seasoning in my mind. And, my many years as a sommelier and wine director, I've learned that really making wine is very similar to being a chef, that winemakers are always looking for the perfect balance, and the grape varietals are just one of the balances that they look for. And so grape winemakers are seasoning in my mind. It's not formulaic, it's not chemistry, it's very similar to being a chef.
Yeah, it's fair to say that. So how did you become the brand ambassador? Because that's really, to me, sounds like a very cool gig.
It is a very cool gig. We have a lot of fun, and the wines are simply delicious. So my job is quite easy. My background is as a sommelier and wine director. So my last on-premise position was with the Borgata, which is a large casino in Atlantic City, and I was the wine director there. From there, I moved to running education for the Charmer Sunbelt Group, which is now Breakthrough Beverage, and I did that for about a decade. And just as I was leaving Charmer Sunbelt, Vino Nobile, the consortio from Vino Nobile, approached me and asked if I would be interested in doing education for them. I must say, it was sort of easy.
That was a very good day. I'm going to just jump in real quick just for our listeners to know that we're in one of the tasting seminars just before it begins. Of course, that is the magic sound of wine glasses being placed critically where they belong. So about how many wines are you tasting today?
Actually, it's a really small tasting today. We're focusing in on four wines, two newer producers from the area, one historical producer that is the large cooperative, and to give people the idea and philosophy of our region and our culture. And then, of course, one of our wineries who has been on the top 100 with Wine Spectator 3 times with their Vino Noble. So we always have to taste their wine.
So I'm going to guess that you're probably a big fan of Montepulciano, I would guess. I mean, that might be obvious, but...
Yeah, thank you. It is obvious to me. But, you know, it's a really tiny boutique region. And I think that the regulations are very interesting and make it extremely interesting for winemakers, because we're not handcuffed by saying you have to be 100% Sangiovese. That's a choice. So if your particular terroir is something that you want to add in another indigenous variety or one of the allowed international varieties, you can do that. And I think that brings us a dimension that some of our neighboring appellations or regions, subregions, don't have the opportunity to do. And there's a creativity on the winemaking side and this really young, vibrant enthusiasm that just makes the wines at this particular moment in time so interesting. So as you can tell, I'm very enthusiastic and I love the wines and drink them at home.
Well, and that's the thing too. I mean, it's not just a matter of education. It's also a matter of enjoyment. While you are a professional as a sommelier, you really like what you do.
Oh, I love what I do, absolutely. I'm also one of the sommeliers for Wine Spectator. So this past weekend, I worked for my 20th vintage with Wine Spectator as one of their backroom sommeliers. And you know, that just sort of, I think, shows my enthusiasm. I'll pick up and work at an event at this point in my career because it's really fun and I get to taste a lot of wines that I otherwise may not have the opportunity to taste.
I know that feeling. We're going to have to wrap up here in a minute because the glasses are getting louder, so they're approaching from behind. How long have you been a sommelier?
Oh, I'm going to show my age. So we'll say well over 20 years.
We'll keep it at that, but you still look very youthful. So if our listeners would like to learn a little bit more about Montepulciano, I'll save it to the shorter name version of it. Online, how would they do that?
Yeah, so if you want more information about Vino Noble, the best thing to do is go to the Consorcio website, and it is really easily Consorcio Vino Noble de Montepulciano. I know, that's a mouthful. But if you type it in, even if your spelling isn't correct, it will come up, I promise. And you can even download a Mazzanighetti map to give you all the producers in the region, the terroir of the region, all kinds of information. So it's a really helpful and useful website. And if you want to look up me, you can find me on Instagram at Estor Wine.
And I follow her on Instagram, so definitely. Thanks very much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
We're still here for the Italian wine experience in Chicago. And I'm here with Laura Donadoni. And Laura is a sommelier. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. I see that my name is quite of a challenge to pronounce, but it's good. Like Pinot Grigio that we are talking about and Laura Donadoni, you know, Italian names can be challenging, but, you know, the wine make it better, right?
Make it a lot better. I guess one of your major roles here today is you're the brand ambassador for Pinot Grigio. Is that correct?
Yeah, today I'm here to represent Pinot Grigio delle Venezie, which is a new denomination, DOC appellation in Italy. But in general, my job is to promote Italian wines in the U.S.
I guess the first question is, how did the DOC come about? Was it just a decision to be a bit more organized or controlling the quality?
Yeah, the DOC delle Venezie was born in 2017, so it's a young DOC, and it came about because they wanted to give more, let's say, quality to the wine. There is more, let's say, guarantees that the wine is a quality wine rather than not. So what the government is trying to do is to allow people to understand that Pinot Grigio is not meant to be just the cheap, let's say, low quality wine that unfortunately is known for internationally, but is a high premium quality wine, especially if coming from the Venezia area and that specific DOC appellation region in Italy.
How do you go about that? I mean, it's a lot of wineries to be working with.
Yeah, they're working with more than 400 wineries because the territory is really wide and broad, but they are setting rules that each and every winery has to respect in order to be labeled as Pinot Grigio delle Venezie DOC. And these rules goes from the viticulture to the winemaking techniques to the style, because they want to find an identity, a common style with all these areas and all this winery to represent the Italian style abroad. So they, for instance, ask the producer to produce less but to have higher quality grapes as a requirement by law. They ask the producer to put only Pinot Grigio in the wine, so the 85% of the wine must be Pinot Grigio, and they allow 15% of non-aromatic varieties because they don't want the aromatic varieties to overwhelm the primary aromas of Pinot Grigio. So they are trying to make an effort to protect the original style of Pinot Grigio delle Venezie and to improve the quality of the viticulture and the winemaking techniques.
So when you're talking about non-aromatic wines, can you name a few just to kind of give our audience an idea what you're talking about?
Yeah, for instance, Chardonnay is considered a non-aromatic variety, or it's better maybe to say what is considered aromatic, because the aromatic varieties are a few, are just like 15 varieties in the world. So we're talking about Moscato, Malvasia, Gewürztraminer. These are varieties with distinctive and very intense aromas. And if you use them in a blend, they can overwhelm the primary aromas of the main grapes. So we don't want that. With Pinot Grigio, we want to preserve the Pinot Grigio characteristics. So they can blend Chardonnay, for instance, and other indigenous white varieties on the territory.
Now you're talking about the reputation that Pinot Grigio has, and I like Pinot Grigio myself, and I know a number of people do, but part of that reason they like it also is it is a very reasonably priced wine, generally speaking.
Yeah, Pinot Grigio really made wine approachable in the years, because it's almost 40 years that is important in the United States. So I bet almost everybody had a glass of Pinot Grigio in his life, in her life. So the, let's say, the merit of Pinot Grigio is to make white wines approachable and easy, let's say, to drink. So and this is a big merit. And also their price point you mentioned is an important characteristic, because it's accessible, it's not an expensive wine. But you have to understand that you can have a range of premium Pinot Grigio wines going from the low priced one to the, let's say, more pricey, that the more pricey are justified by the quality and the peculiarity of that specific style. So don't be intimidated to buy a bottle of $20-$24 of Pinot Grigio, because you're gonna have a really outstanding wine that can really be compared to one of the best Chardonnay for a fraction of the price, for instance, because if you want to drink a good Chardonnay from Napa, you're not going to spend $24. You're going to spend way more. So give it a try. Maybe premium Pinot Grigio can be something that you will really enjoy.
Yeah, I think it's kind of an all-around wine where you can drink it on your own. Certainly, I think it's best to be pairing it with food. And you were talking about a few suggested pairings during the seminar. But what are a few of those?
So Pinot Grigio is a very versatile wine in terms of food pairing. And this is another key and hallmark of Pinot Grigio from Italy. You know, we in Italy tend to drink wine with food always, most of the time. So when we, let's say, craft a wine, we always think about what we can eat with it. So Pinot Grigio, for instance, the most common pairing is with seafood or fish dishes, because it's a white wine, but it's not absolutely, you can pair it with also white meats or more richer preparation because of the range of styles you have in the Pinot Grigio production. So the simple Pinot Grigio, fresh citrusy Pinot Grigio goes well with the fish and shellfish, spaghetti alle vongole, for instance, clam spaghetti or this kind of dishes. But the richer Pinot Grigio, or that you can have like the Ramato Pinot Grigio, the one with the copper color, for instance, can go well with white meat, so chicken piccata or turkey. With now Thanksgiving is approaching, so think about the pairing with turkey. So it's a very again, versatile wine, you can have fun with the pairing, also with the Asian cuisine, for instance, because it has a lot of aromatic herbs, especially the Pinot Grigio delle Venezie, and the acidity helps to cleanse your palate from the richer preparation, so you can play around with it, yeah.
You'd mentioned to me you live in San Diego. How long have you been living in the U.S.?
It's 7 years now. I spent 2 years in L.A. and now 5 years in San Diego. Yeah.
And what part of Italy are you from originally?
I'm from Bergamo, which is a tiny city, 30 miles east from Milan in the Alps. And the area is known for having the smallest appellation of Italy, which is a DOCG, and it's called the Moscato di Scanzo. It's a red grape Moscato, which is produced like an Amarone style. So it's a sweet but tannic. So you can pair it with cheeses that in the area are produced pretty well because we are in the mountain on the Alps.
And how long have you been a sommelier?
Now it's almost 10 years because I was a sommelier also before moving to the U.S. I was a wine journalist in Italy and I still am.
When you started as a sommelier, was it primarily as a journalist? Was it working in restaurants? Or was it varying from there?
I've never worked in a restaurant as a sommelier. So my sommelier degree was really for communication. So I've always been in communication and my job is mainly communicating wines. So I need, of course, a sommelier degree because I need to know what I'm talking about. So for wine education is so important for my job. So I started from there, from the wine education, and then I became a journalist. So I became writing about wines, and then I had a little TV show in Italy about food and wine, and then when I moved to the U.S., the natural job was for me talking about my country and my wines, food-wise and wine-wise.
I like you say, my country and my wine. A lot of pride in Italian wines.
Yeah, I'm very proud. I'm very happy to promote my country and my wines because I feel blessed being Italian. We have so much diversity, and you know, you can find really thousands of different typical dishes, different typical wines. Just traveling 10 kilometers from your own place, you can find a huge diversity. And I think this is the peculiarity of Italy, and I feel really blessed to represent this in the U.S.
If our listeners want to learn a little bit more about you on the web, how would they do that?
You can find me as The Italian Wine Girl on Instagram, and also my blog is called The Italian Wine Girl, and my YouTube channel as well, so you can see me in action in Italy visiting wineries all day long.
Excellent. Laura, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, continuing in Chicago at the Italian Tasting, my next guest, I'm going to go ahead and let her introduce herself because of her name's a little complicated for me, so go ahead.
Egle, E-G-L-E. It's a Greek name, but I'm really Italian, but the name is Greek. My parents are a little bit creative. I was born in Italy, in the south of Italy, but I live in Verona together with my family. And the winery is located in the province of Verona. The main headquarters is in the province of Verona.
And what is the name of the winery?
The name of the winery is Albino Armani Viticoltori dal 1607, which means vine growers since 1607.
So you have had how many generations so far?
Oh, it's a family winery since 1607. So we're talking about more than 400 years of history in wine.
So, you know, I often tell people who've been doing this for such a long time, that's a lot of weight on your shoulders, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So were you born into the winery, or how did that work?
No, I started when I got married, and now I'm totally involved in this business.
What do you do? What is your position at the winery?
I'm responsible for marketing and communication at the winery.
And you were telling me when we were walking in the hallway that you make a number of different wines. Tell me about the wines you're making.
We produce a wide range of products because we have wineries and vineyards in three different regions, in Northeast Italy, Veneto, Friuli, and Trentino. This means we have a wide range of products, very different from each other, from Prosecco to Amarone. So it's like quite a big range of products.
So the vineyards are located all over the country then?
Main winery is in the province of Verona in the Adige Valley, Val d'Adige, the valley of the river Adige, because of the river running through the valley.
And how long have you and your husband been married?
More than 30, good question, more than 30 years. So we have been working together for a long time.
So were you a wine lover? I mean, being of Italian heritage, I would assume so, but was that part of your interests, is being a wine lover?
Yeah, of course, yes. I've always been a wine lover, but being involved in the wine business, I'm getting more and more enthusiastic about this job.
So what do you find the most interesting part of what you do?
Traveling, meeting people like you, and having fun with a lot of different people, and matching wine and food.
Do you find, especially when you come to America, that people have a little bit of fear in talking about the wines that you're representing, that they're fear of the unknown?
Maybe this is our fault, because wine is something simple, something you have to enjoy. It is not so complicated, so it's our fault. Sometimes we talk about technical questions and we don't go directly to the final. We should get to the point. The point is enjoy the wine, enjoy matching wine and food. This is the most important thing.
How long are you on the road here in the States for the Italian tour?
Oh, we came yesterday and we are leaving tomorrow. We are going to meet customers and distributors and then go back home in a couple of days.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed your trip. You've been over here before, I assume, right?
Oh, yes. I've been traveling in the U.S. many times.
For our listeners who would like to learn a little bit about you and about your winery, what is your web address?
albinoarmani.com.
Excellent. That was easy. Thanks very much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Learn more by visiting IEEMUSA.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak and Catherine Shearer. Copyright 2019.